Peter B. Collins News and Comment here on Thursday, March 22nd. Obama is doing the Clinton.
Well, come on, everybody, get into the spin. Now that he's been in for however long it's been. Grin a good old grin, tuck in your second chin. And everybody do the Clinton.
Now, what are the steps, huh?
Over to the middle.
Over to the middle.
Straighten up and step line.
Up and step line.
Lean it to the left a little.
To the left a little.
Now lean a lot to the right.
A lot to the right. And once again, Barack Obama tilts to opponents, negotiating with himself, and tries to take an issue off the table by appeasing the right, which will never be appeased, particularly in this high-energy, high-testosterone election year. It's about the Keystone Pipeline. Yes, the president pleased environmentalists and Bill McKibben's 350.org that has led a very important protest to the Keystone XL pipeline, and he put it off. Then the Republicans tried to connect it to the extension of the payroll tax cut, and the president prevailed. He bluffed them out of that one. But was he serious about blocking the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline? The answer is no. And today, the president did a photo op and speech next to the southern leg of the Keystone XL pipeline. And he made a statement that we can't drill our way to energy independence, as he contradicted that point by embracing the pipeline, not the northern leg, which is controversial, and that's going to have to be worked out by the affected states. But down south, where nobody cares about the environment and they've got oil in their blood, this is a popular move. And so while he speaks out of one side of his mouth, saying that we, you know, can't drill our way to lower gas prices, quote, if I put an oil rig on the south lawn of the White House, if we had one right next to the Washington Monument, even if we drilled every little bit of this great country of ours, we'd still have to buy the rest of our needs from someplace else. Now, that's true. And in a moment, I'll cite a study that establishes that. We cannot drill our way to lower gas prices. And then he said that he applauds TransCanada, the parent company of the Keystone XL pipeline. And at the same time, he stood by his administration's decision to withhold the construction permit on the northern leg and accused Republicans of trying to short-circuit a study of the project's potential environmental impact. Here's the president, quote, the southern leg of it, we're making a priority, and we're going to go ahead and get that done. The northern portion of it, we're going to have to review properly and make sure that the health and safety of the American people are protected. That's common sense, he said. But this is crazy-making. It's not only confusing, incoherent, and insulting to those of us on the professional left, but it ignores the central issue of the Keystone XL pipeline. Sure, it might leak and it shouldn't be routed through sensitive aquifers. The real issue is that we're going to take tar sands extracted crude oil from Canada, flush it down this pipeline to Texas, refine it so that the pollution stays here in the United States, and then export the gasoline or other oil products that are refined from it. Does that make any fracking sense whatsoever? No, it doesn't. Larry Schweiger, National Wildlife Federation president. Obama has taken a dangerous wrong turn on energy. Oil companies are drilling like never before and spilling like never before, yet we're paying at the pump like never before. Rushing pipelines and drill rigs for rich oil executives will only delay the investments we need in renewable energy and create long-lasting damage to our waters and our lands. This is just another triangulation, and that's why I played Roy Zimmerman and the Four Men do the Clinton. Yeah, he leaned a little to the left when he temporarily blocked the Keystone XL pipeline's northern leg. And now he's leaning all the way to the right. And why? Because the Republican presidential campaign, either one of these candidates is getting close to Obama? No. It's pure and simple triangulation, moving to the middle, trying to hog the center of the political road. Policies, the environment, people like me and you, we are all expendable in his pursuit of re-election. Now to the study I referenced, Associated Press, Dateline Washington Today. It's the political cure-all for high gas prices. Drill here, drill now. But more U.S. drilling has not changed how deeply the gas pump drills into your wallet, according to an Associated Press statistical analysis of 36 years of data. So this is not just recent history. It's not just since Obama became president. It goes back to 1976. And it shows that there is no direct correlation between the rate of domestic oil drilling and the cost of a gallon of gasoline. The cost of gas at the pump is highly manipulated, and we're feeling it right now. Yes, crude oil prices have gone up a little bit, but we know that most of the oil that's being refined for our gasoline comes from the United States. Obama doesn't even trumpet a major accomplishment that he may not, you know, properly take credit for, but it's occurred on his watch, and so presidents do that kind of thing. We are importing less oil as a percentage of our consumption than ever before. And so the signals that this president is sending by this photo op on the southern leg of the Keystone XL pipeline really expose him for the cynical manipulator he truly is. And I advisedly used the word fracking instead of, the F word a few minutes ago. And it's because there is important news surfacing about fracking. It's technically known as hydrofracking. And there are a number of issues here, and I want to credit truthout.org because they've done some excellent reporting on this issue. And what we know is that there are now nearly 500,000 active natural gas wells across 32 of the United States. That is almost double the number since 1990. And 90% of those 500,000 natural gas wells are using fracking to extract more gas. Now, keep in mind that during the Cheney-Bush administration, they rammed through legislation that basically exempted fracking from the control of the EPA and from state governments. And Obama hasn't made any significant moves to change that. And the impacts are starting to be very clearly seen. We have to give credit for Josh Fox, who produced the very important film called Gasland. And in that, I don't know if you've seen it, but there is this dramatic scene where he takes a Bic lighter and puts it up to his kitchen tap as water is flowing out. He lights the lighter, and there is so much gas escaping from the water line that you see a big burst of flame. That is a very dramatic depiction of the damage caused to groundwater by hydrofracking. And this is an issue that has really hit home in the state of New York and in the state of Pennsylvania. And one town in Pennsylvania called Dimock, D-I-M-O-C-K, is the site of a study that is being conducted by the EPA. And Josh Fox and other activists have reviewed the findings of the EPA, and then they went to the original data. They got their own samples, and they analyzed those samples. So they got the test summaries from 6 of 11 families whose properties had been reviewed or tested. They went to independent experts and found that the EPA summaries did report explosive levels of methane, heavy metals, hazardous chemicals. All 6 of the results contained at least one serious health concern, either from the chemicals present or from methane levels. In 4 of the 6 cases, methane levels exceeded the actionable threshold at 7 milligrams per liter. The one other test showed methane levels at 7 times the legal limit. And yet the EPA is slow peddling the report and any implementation of fixes. Some of that is administrative. Some of it is restraints put in place by Congress. And some of it is politics. Meanwhile, in Pennsylvania, the Governor Tom Corbett has signed a new law which not only takes away the right of a local government to use zoning laws to regulate natural gas drilling sites, but it also puts a gag on doctors who are treating patients for suspected chemical exposure. And get this, the gag order on doctors is based on the fact that the chemicals that make the patient sick are a trade secret. Yeah, isn't that beautiful? Quote, if a health professional determines that a medical emergency exists and the specific identity and amount of any chemicals claimed to be a trade secret or confidential proprietary information are necessary for emergency treatment, the vendor shall immediately disclose the information to the health professional upon a verbal acknowledgement by the health professional that the information may not be used for purposes other than the health needs asserted. So, you show up at your doctor. You're sick because of chemicals used in underground fracking near you. The doctor can get information about the chemicals that have been used, but he can't reveal that information. It's not clear here whether he's allowed to tell the patient, but this is just really ridiculous. And over at the Public Record, the great website that was started by Jason Leopold of truthout.org, and we're going to commend him for other work in a moment, there's a quote from Dr. Helen Podgany, a pediatrician from Coraopolis, Pennsylvania. I've never seen anything like this in 37 years of practice, she said. Her first priority is to diagnose and treat, to be proactive in preventing harm to others. She said the new law hinders preventative measures for our patients and slows the treatment process by gagging free discussion. This is utterly amazing. And where's the Obama administration? Our green friends in the White House? I'm not feeling that kind of love. I mentioned Jason Leopold. I mentioned Truth Out. Jason has been a guest on my radio program and on this podcast on many occasions. And I think he is a great, intrepid, dogged investigative reporter. And in recent podcast interviews, Jason has talked about his work under the Freedom of Information Act, filing with government agencies like the FBI, to get them to disclose information so he can write news stories. And he had a big break this week because one of his FOIA requests resulted in a big document dump from the Department of Homeland Security. And the staff at Truth Out is still working through the documents, and they've posted a couple of stories so far. And the central point here is that Leopold asked the FBI and Department of Homeland Security for any correspondence, emails, or memos related to the Occupy Wall Street movement and its sisters and brothers across the country. And at Homeland Security, we know from a slip from the mayor of Oakland, Gene Kwan, that DHS and a group that gets funding from it, a pro-police legislative coordinating group, had staged a conference call with, I believe, 18 police chiefs and or mayors from across the country who represented cities with Occupy protest encampments. And they were coordinating their strategies. We know that. So when Leopold asked for the documents, the FBI said, oh, documents? Occupy? No, we don't know nothing. But what he's gotten from DHS is fascinating. And a real surprise to me is that there are people in the Department of Homeland Security who know what the First Amendment says, and despite the pressure from peers and superiors, they continue to raise issues about improper government crackdowns that violate the First Amendment. So here's an email from October 7. And it says, both myself and somebody else are somewhat concerned that several items contained in this intelligence bulletin might be advocating surveillance and other countermeasures to be employed against activities protected under the First Amendment. Then they ask for clarification. So there definitely is confusion among the people at the Department of Homeland Security about what their appropriate role is and when it would violate the First Amendment. Here's another one from October 31st. I fear that no matter how you parse a potential report, any product on OWS which seeks to report on the movement in general or the potential for violence nationwide would be largely reporting on First Amendment protected activity. On November 16, a CBS News correspondent in California, Bigod Shaban, sent a media request to the Department of Homeland Security. And from there, the people inside started to say, whoa. First it was CBS, then another news agency contacted them. Next email, 10 minutes later, and now Salon. This is getting legs. Any info would be greatly appreciated ASAP. So, number one, I am just delighted that Truth Out has succeeded in prying this information out of the government, and I am surprised and delighted that there are people in DHS who truly do honor the First Amendment. Here's another example related to an event in the state of Oregon where an SUV was burned after it had been covered in anti-oil pro-occupation graffiti. And the investigation was just getting underway when there was an exchange of emails. And one analyst wrote, any violence thus far seems to be limited to clashes between some individuals during attempts to remove protesters from certain locations or enforce curfews. On the incident in Eugene, we'd be particularly concerned about attribution of the incident. The article notes that the police say they don't know who set the fire or why they did it. Now, a more hawkish person, name is also redacted here, said, I expect that the analyst considers the single incident to be an incident of domestic terrorism. Now, they don't even know who caused this. And already he is saying that it's linked to attacks by the Earth Liberation Front on SUVs. He said, I would argue that the DHS authority to report would be based on this being a suspected domestic terrorism incident. I think a reasonable case could be made for that. And while that person's name was redacted, they left behind the ESQ in the address line, which indicates that that person is an attorney. So it's very interesting that people who are not profiled as attorneys, and they certainly may be, we don't have enough information to say, but here's somebody who does profile as an attorney who is willing to violate the First Amendment. So kudos to Truth Out, and I've put out an invitation to Jason Leopold to join us on the program early next week to give us more information about the documents that he has pried out of the Department of Homeland Security. On the campaign trail, the latest gaffe coming from the Romney campaign relates to the Etch-a-Sketch comment. Yeah. Now, this is a really dumb thing to say. The guy's name is Fernstrom, Eric Fernstrom. He is one of the many highly paid advisors to Mitt Romney. And he said, you know, he was on CNN, and he was asked if all the mudslinging in the primary and all this super PAC slime would affect Romney's chances in the fall. And you've heard this, you know, you hit a reset button for the fall campaign, everything changes, it's like an Etch-a-Sketch. You can kind of shake it up and we start all over again. Now, there is an element of truth to this because of the limited memories of the American people, the role that the media plays in only bringing you today's news and never even reprising what happened last week, unless there's sex involved. And so I'll give you this example. We're here at the end of March. 4 years ago, at about this time, the incendiary videotapes of Reverend Jeremiah Wright's sermons in Chicago were just starting to hit the mainstream. Sean Hannity had been playing them for a couple of months, but it wasn't until George Stephanopoulos asked about Reverend Wright in a debate, and he was prompted to do so by operatives from the Hillary Clinton campaign. It wasn't until then that Jeremiah Wright and his goddamn America and the chickens are coming home to roost that those highly edited clips, we'll offer this up in memory of Andrew Breitbart, were used to try to destroy the candidacy of Barack Obama. And Democrats recovered from that. And I doubt if Reverend Wright was on anybody's mind in November when they voted for Obama. The Pope is on his way to Mexico, and it's a political mission. He is trying to prop up PAN, the National Action Party, which is the conservative Catholic party, and the Felipe Calderon is the current president of Mexico. He is termed out. And so the Pope is there to rally the Catholic right in Mexico. And I mention this because I am really offended at the way conservative Catholics are operating in such a self-righteous way, in violation of my rights as a secular American to be free of religious imposition. And when I took the day off the other day and went skiing, the end of the day I got in the car and flipped on the radio and went searching for a local NPR station to catch up on All Things Considered. And instead, the radio seeked and found a Christian Catholic radio station. It's called Catholic Radio. And I listened for about an hour, and I was so appalled and infuriated because in the name of Jesus, in the name of the Catholic Church, we have very self-righteous conservative leaders and their acolytes who are trying to rewrite history, take us back to the 1950s, or maybe it's the 1590s, and really reinforce the authoritarian, paternalistic structure of the Catholic Church. And we're seeing any effort to elevate women to equal status with men be completely thrown out the window over contraception and abortion issues. And we're seeing that thinking Catholics are being alienated from the church because of these ridiculous moves about contraception and, to a lesser extent from a Catholic point of view, about abortion. And the very radical conservative elements who dominate today, who fill out the Catholic bishops and the cardinals, most of whom are members of Opus Dei, the super secret Catholic sect. And gay marriage scares them so much that they feel justified and overly righteous in trying to impose their views not only on the broad population of American Catholics, but on the whole damn country. And when it comes to these issues of personal sexuality and morality, the Catholic Church has lost all credibility, if it ever had some, because of the pedophilia scandals and because of their clear actions to obstruct justice. Example, we have communications between the Vatican and the Archbishop in Dublin, Ireland, instructing him not to cooperate with the Irish government in the investigation and prosecution of criminals who happen to be Catholic priests. And for them to be able to embrace this kind of duality, denial of the criminal behavior, sinful behavior, if you want to put it in the context of religion, that massive denial, coupled with the aggressive promotion of these radical and conservative positions, it just takes my breath away. And many of you may know that I'm a recovering Catholic. I was raised, went to Catholic school for grade school, a Jesuit high school. But I am embarrassed as one who has left the Catholic Church but cannot erase those roots that these people operate and pose as leaders who reflect the views and values of so many Americans. And if you are a liberal Catholic, I am challenging you to speak up and to speak out. Go challenge your parish priest when he reads the directive from the bishop telling you how to vote and to raise money to try to repeal gay marriage rights in states across the country. Don't sit there passively, because you are basically being told to either toe the line or leave the Catholic Church. And if you don't want to leave the church, I believe you have an obligation. If you believe in the message of Jesus Christ, that's who you should be thinking of. That's who you should be channeling. Because I don't think if Jesus were here today that he would be leading the charge to repeal gay marriage laws across the country. Thanks for listening to my rant. Why don't you rant back at me, humblehost@peterbcollins.com, and share this podcast with a friend. It's free.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then.